I'm John Crawl. This Saturday is American Graduate Day. In preparation for that day-long celebration of students who make the commitment to graduate and put themselves on the path to successful careers and satisfying lives, we're going to continue our ongoing community conversation about the importance of education. We'll talk about different paths to learning. My guests are 100 Black Men Board President James Duke, Jennifer Burke, President and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall, co-founder of Indie Pulse, a slam poetry project aimed at students. Please join the conversation. Call 866-476-3881. Email nolimits@wfyi.org. Facebook is No Limits WFYI. Twitter is WFYI. Now, this news.
No Limits is made possible by Apparatus, managing IT infrastructure so companies don't have to. It's advanced IT made simple. Learn more at apparatus.net.
Welcome to No Limits. I am John Crawl, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StateHouseFile.com, and your host. This Saturday is American Graduate Day, and American Graduate is an ongoing community conversation that has been pulled together by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and public broadcasting stations, including WFYI, all across the country, to promote the importance of graduation and putting young people on the right path to successful lives and careers. If you would like to join the conversation today, which is going to be largely about education and what we can do to help young people on their path to success, please give us a call at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests today are 100 Black Men Board President James Duke, Jennifer Burke, who is the president and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall, co-founder of Indie Pulse, a slam poetry project aimed at students. Welcome to all of you. It's great to have you here in the studio with us.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Well, I'm going to start first by asking you to talk a little bit about why education and, you know, helping young people succeed in life is as important as it is to each of your organizations or initiatives. James, I'll start with you.
Thanks, John. Education is absolutely important. The 100 Black Men of Indianapolis has been around since 1984. And our big mission is to positively advance the outcome and development of youth in our community. And all the programs that we offer center around education, making sure the students position themselves to be successful. We understand that we cannot guarantee success, but we can guarantee that we're going to equip them with the tools to be successful. We understand that without an education, your options are greatly diminished. So we push all of our students towards that educational factor, be it 4-year, be it 2-year, be it vocational, what have you. There are various forms of education that we understand. But we make sure that we put them in that position to make sure that they are as successful as they can be.
Jennifer, I'm glad you are here with us. This is a very, very busy day for Junior Achievement today. Could you talk a little bit? I know before the show we were talking about how early your day started today. Could you talk a little bit about your priority for today, your organization's priority, and what all is involved?
Sure, John. Thank you. We are really pleased to be a part of Indie Do Day and Lilly's Global Day of Service today. So we've partnered with Lilly and have more than 300 volunteers in classrooms across the city, bringing junior achievement programs to about 3,000 students today. And the reason we find that to be so important is we work to really inspire and empower young people to own their future success. So like James, we understand that far too many people fail to graduate from high school. They don't pursue post-secondary education, and they become adults without possessing the knowledge, skills, and confidence that they need to feel empowered to pursue their dreams and to support a successful future. So we aim to inspire young people to understand the relevance of education to a successful future.
And Lauren, you're the one who puts a little bit of rhythm to the effort, right? or cadence,
yeah.
as it were. Could you talk to me a little bit about the origins of Indie Pulse and what you aim to achieve?
Sure. So Indie Pulse derives from my teaching experiences on the east side of Indianapolis. I taught in a cyclically underserved community, and my school was set to be closed, and I saw some students who were anything but failures. Hardy, resilient individuals internalized this sense that they weren't good enough, and that really stuck with me. And so I launched Indie Pulse with three co-founders to offer students a way to process their experiences, to create positive community, to really embolden their learning, and create a productive conversation about how to, you know, actualize their agency, take control, and really pursue their dreams in life.
I know that WFYI's Lee Dinoon caught up with,
yes,
some of your students earlier this week. I think we will play some sound from Lee's story.
Wonderful.
Now.
Camilla Davis is a Belzer language arts teacher and co-founder of Indie Pulse, a slam poetry organization dedicated to creating time and space for kids to express themselves. Slam poetry at Belzer started out as a club, but the principal saw the impact it was having and asked Davis if she would teach it, so it has become an elective.
Slam poetry is a derivative of traditional poetry, but it's in the vernacular of urban young people. It's a style of poetry where people can express themselves in their natural way of speaking, and it's very performative. Regular poetry is meant for the page. Slam poetry is meant for the stage.
To get ready for the stage, the kids work on performance skills.
So what they're learning is how to work in a community, because there's a rhythm. They have to keep the rhythm in unison. They're learning performance stance. How do I look and stand in front of a group of people? They're learning voice. How to articulate, because they have to say something across a circle. How do I project my voice? How do I say something?
Davis prompts the poetry writing with questions like, what color represents the feeling of your mother? If you were a monster, what would you be? And where do you feel safe?
I'm always surprised about the honesty. Even today, one student, she's writing a poem about how she was born a crack baby. And to say that in front of your peers, kids that can very easily make fun of you, and it's such a vulnerable topic because it says something about your family and where you live and all that, I was just like, wow, she would just do it and be confident about doing it. So I'm really excited, surprised, but then proud of them for being able to write these stories.
It's about building trust, and the students get it. Miss Davis is small in stature, but highly respected. Eighth grader Antoine Hazlett.
She's not like every other teacher, because, you know, every other teacher is just rude and mean and give you assignments after assignments and stuff like that. But she's like, she'll be a teacher, but she'll be a friend at the same time. So I think that's pretty cool.
Dangenae Jones says the 1 p.m. slam poetry class is the highlight of her day.
I feel happy because, as an example, today I wasn't feeling so well, and I was, like, upset. But when I come here, it's like all my fears and hurt goes away, and I can be myself without no judgment.
Davis says building that trusting culture is her number one priority.
The first 2 weeks of school, all we're doing is sharing stories about our lives, our families, our likes, our dislikes, and they really get to know each other.
One by one, Ms. Davis's students step up to the microphone in a performance classroom filled with fellow students and family members. This is student Nathan Terhune's dystopian-sounding poem.
Grabbed by greedy people? No, monsters. Greedy, deceptive monsters called men. But a new cure is coming, a man who inspired a generation of writers, readers, and poets. He's coming, teaching future writers how to let words fly upon charcoal black raven's wings where no one else has ever flown before.
For Nathan, Miss Davis plays the real life part of the man in his poem.
If Miss Davis stays here for a while, she could very well be inspiring a whole new generation of poets.
For 90.1 WFYI News, I'm Lee Dinoon, Indianapolis.
That was Lee Dinoon, WFYI's Lee Dinoon's story about Indie Pulse, one of the co-founders of Indie Pulse. Lauren Hall is on the show with us today, along with 100 Black Men President James Duke and Jennifer Burke, who's the president and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, in anticipation of American Graduate Day this Saturday. One of the things in listening to all of you talking about your organization and the priority that you place on engaging with young people, what I hear as a common theme is that you all try to meet them where they are, that
Absolutely.
You try to figure out, you know, exactly what their challenges are. And I thought maybe we could talk a little bit about what the challenges, the impediments toward graduation or success in school might be for some of these young people. I think I'll take it in reverse order this time and start with Lauren.
Certainly. It's a good question. A big part of Indie Pulse is listening. We are meant to listen to our students. You know, coming from an education background, being a teacher, I thought a lot about how can we make our schools more equipped, better able to listen to our young people and help connect that into their learning. I do, you know, all of us can sit here and realize how beleaguered schools are these days, whether it be the newest public policy, standardized testing, just a lot of constraints that inhibit a teacher and especially a school administrator's ability to think more dynamically about young people. And so, you know, we really see the opportunity to provide this sort of outside lens. And, you know, we have principals, we have educators, we have community members come to our events and be really inspired and changed in not only the way they see young people, but also the way they understand themselves. So a part of that is listening, starting the conversation, and then making sure there's follow-up so that students feel like they're supported in community.
Jennifer, where do you see the challenges in getting people, young people, to engage with their educational experiences and their educational careers?
Well, I certainly agree with Lauren when she talks about inspiration being key. And we know that so many students just don't see the relevance of their education to the real world and the future. And that becomes particularly relevant in middle school, where students tend to choose one path or another. The year with the greatest number of dropouts we know is ninth grade. And so we aim to start early and build a foundation with students of exposing them to very hands-on experiential learning opportunities that allow them to actually try out jobs, to get an understanding of the breadth of career opportunities that are out there for them, to assess their own interests and talents and develop their strengths so that they can have an actionable plan for future success.
James.
Yes, with the 100, one of our big focus areas, obviously, is mentoring. Mm-hmm. And so we understand that in order for a student to be successful in the educational realm, it's not just about the actual items in the books and the tests and that type of thing, but it's about understanding who they are and how their approach to learning is going to be an impact for them. We try to get them excited about the learning. We teach them to have patience. One of our programs, our Battalion Military Scholarship Program, has a man plan in which we walk through with them their plan for the rest of their lives. And as we try to get career mentors in front of them, our motto is what they see is what they'll be. So in putting people who are in those fields where they want to be, they get a chance to sit down and talk to them and find out what steps it took, especially around the education, to get to that place.
Is some of it then that obviously they need to feel a personal connection, someone they can trust guiding them through the process, James?
Absolutely, because in our dialogue, in our conversations with our young people that we work with, we have those conversations with them. And when they have that level of trust that is there, they're more transparent. And in order to get them to be more transparent, we as their mentors have to be transparent as well.
What do you mean by transparency?
Being willing to talk about our failures. You know, it's not always about the successes, but because we know that in order to get to a certain level, you have to come across some failures that you have. So if we're willing to talk about that, then they can see, hey, you know what? I don't always have to be spot on for everything.
If you please.
Oh, yeah. Just to jump in, I James makes an incredible point. We talk about this a lot with Indie Pulse in this terms of being vulnerable. The most powerful, powerful tool that a poet has is their words and their voice, and they are able to be vulnerable yet not be victims. Mm-hmm. And so the way we kind of think about mentorship is having those small points of inception where we can have students realize their own growth with great adults.
We are talking about American Graduate Day, which is this Saturday. My guests are 100 Black Men Board President James Duke, Jennifer Burke of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall of Indie Pulse, a slam poetry project. I'm John Kroll. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Kroll, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of thestatehousefile.com, and your host. This Saturday is American Graduate Day. American Graduate, of course, is an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and many public broadcasting stations, including WFYI, that is designed to leverage the power of public broadcasting stations to help improve the lives of young people and put them on the path to graduation and success. We are talking with 100 Black Men Board President James Duke, Jennifer Burke, who is the president and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall, co-founder of Indie Pulse, a slam poetry project aimed at students. If you'd like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. You can send an email to nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi or on Twitter at wfyi. Jennifer, I wanted to talk a little bit about, you know, because in some ways we veered from the impediments. We've already made the transition to not just what the challenges are, the things that that might inhibit or prevent young people from graduating or doing well in school or, you know, let's be frank, even enjoying the idea of learning and engaging with the world,
right,
to approaches that that work as interventions that sort of break that pattern. What are some of the models we have seen that can take, young people who are considered high risk or at least high risk for failure or dropping out and turn them around? What approaches have a record of success?
Well, we know that students and even adults learn best by doing. And so our programs, which start as early as pre-K and kindergarten and run all the way through 12th grade, all age-appropriate and tied to Indiana's academic standards for the particular grade level, are all about hands-on, project-based learning, opportunities to get in and do, not just listen. And we think that through a variety of different activities, most frequently presented by volunteers, folks from the community who are willing to come in and share their experiences, their challenges, the obstacles they've overcome, that's what inspires our young people to feel like they have the opportunity to also overcome their obstacles they may face, and to just expose them to the broad base of opportunities that are out there for them. So we know kids all learn in different ways, and we try and have a model that supports all those different learning styles.
Are there institutional barriers toward, students having success in school or even feeling like they enjoy it? I mean, we're having obviously a tremendous debate in this state and across the country about what the educational experience should be. Lauren, you said something at the beginning of the show that has stuck in my head from the moment you said it, which is that when you were teaching, you encountered students in what was perceived to be a failing school, but they were failures in no way, which argues that the students weren't failing there. It was somehow the school or the educational structure that was letting them down.
Absolutely. So there's multiple layers here, right? So students are in a school, and for some reason throughout the past few decades, we have come to the conclusion that schools are the center point that can solve poverty. And that's just not true. It requires a variety of resources and tools and all these different assets that can be evoked in a community but are not necessarily apparent on the surface. And so one of the biggest things I realized was how valuable literacy is. And the power of words and language, and how much more invested students are in acquiring the sort of skills that are helpful in a professional life if they are able to, a term we use often is code switch, and so really think about their stories in a variety of ways and use different languages to come to that. So yeah, you know, our students aren't failures. And it's important for them to be able to speak their truth.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about education and the importance of graduation in anticipation of American Graduate Day this Saturday. If you would like to join the conversation, please reach out to us by email at nolimits@wfyi.org. You can find us on Facebook at nolimitswfyi, on Twitter at wfyi, or you can do what a listener named Tim has done and give us a call at 866-476-3881. Tim, welcome to the program.
Yes. Oh. Are you there?
Yes, yes.
Okay, I'm sorry.
Not a problem.
It's a good program that you're having today.
Thank you.
I'm not familiar with all the people on your panel, but I am familiar with the 100 Black Men. Mm-hmm. I know for a fact, and I like people who are listening to know that they do a really good job at what they do. My late wife had my son in that program and got me to be in it. And I saw firsthand how it worked and how they work with the community. They feed you. They nourish your brain. They do things. They're action. They do, you know, they do things. Coming from a person that didn't have a father, it really helped me to be a father now that I'm a single father. I'm a widower. And my wife worked with them, and I really wanted to thank them for all the things that they've done. My son's in high school now; he's special needs. They never made a big deal about him being special needs. They did what they did with the other kids, and I really wanted to thank them for that for their help.
Tim, I want to thank you very much for your call, and also express my condolences in the loss of your wife. I have to tell you, since you can't see into the studio, that you've made James very, very happy. So thank you. Thank you very much.
His name was, I don't know, he has an unusual name. I'll probably remember. His name was Chakotay.
Okay, yes. Uh-huh.
Yeah, okay. Thank you.
All
he's
right.
doing really well. He's in high school now, and he's doing really well. Thank you.
That's awesome.
Thank you very much for the call, Tim. Well, let's talk a little bit about that, because I think Tim's call highlights some of the challenges here you know, not everyone comes to school at the same point with the same level of preparation, the same level of advantages or disadvantages. Clearly, 100 Black Men was started in part, you know, we can choose the term to describe what it is, whether it's a supplement, whether it's an intervention, mm-hmm. whether it's, and it may vary based on the kid, but clearly there was a feeling that merely the institutional opportunities were not enough for some of these young people. Are there ways possibly that we could restructure and restructure our educational system so that, not to put you guys out of business, but so that 100 Black Men or even J.A. or Indy Pulse aren't quite as necessary as they seem to be right now? I'll start with you on that, James.
Right. We know with our organization that obviously it takes a village. Mm-hmm. And One of the approaches that we have is with the majority of our programs, we try to engage the parents as much as possible. Mm-hmm. Because we found that, you know, for the limited time that we are engaged with the students, you know, it may be for a few hours a week or a day, what have you. We have to sometimes erase those negative forces that they have to encounter all day, every day. So the more that we engage the parents in our mentoring and our educational process, the better that they have achieved and excelled. So we know that those barriers that are there without the parents being engaged, and if they don't have parents specifically, any of those male or female role model forces that are in their life, engaging them in our process.
Yeah, and Lauren, I mean, right now, much of the focus in our discussions about education in this state and in Indiana focused almost exclusively on the teachers and their responsibility. James is making a point here. It's very difficult in today's environment to talk about the importance of the parents' role in education. Is that one of the major factors when students don't engage? I can see James is already leaning back into the microphone for a second bite, so I'll go with Lauren first. I'm going to give Jennifer a shot, and then James, you'll just have to be patient. I'll make sure everybody gets a chance to talk. Okay.
2 points. James, yeah, he's right on. We purposefully engage our parents and guardians and siblings as well. We, at our events, we are careful to make sure that our parents, community members, siblings have opportunities to talk. Because a big part of our process is that we don't want to make individuals and their process of becoming more, you know, articulate, more self-regulating, more, you know, productive and happy in life dependent on our program, right? We want to allow those students and those parents and those siblings to start conversations amongst themselves. And so I have seen parents, you know, shed tears because their student is on stage saying things that they have never said in their home before. So we provide that platform for youth to express themselves. And frankly, we are giving them the tools, yes, through literacy, but also through very calculated social justice youth development curriculum to ensure that they are able to articulate love and resilience and hardship and pain in a way that a lot of folks around them may not be able to. And then we kind of give them those tools, let those conversations start, and make sure we continue as needed.
Jennifer, 2 questions. A, how important are parents to that process, and how do we engage with them if they aren't particularly involved in their children's educational experiences?
Sure. Well, we certainly agree that parents, grandparents, guardians, siblings are all very important to the support structure and future success of our students. So there are many ways that we try and engage the families and other caretakers of our students. One of the first is many parents are involved in actually taking our classroom programs into the classroom. And also, many know our JA BizTown program, primarily for fifth graders. We typically have 30 adult mentors there every day. And depending on the situation, those may be all parents with a waiting list of other parents that wanted to be there to participate. Or they may be wonderful, caring leaders from the community that come in and support a school where there isn't the opportunity for as much parental support, where both parents may be working and not have the opportunity to do that, or single parent home, or any of, you know, many situations. So we try and make the experiences as robust as we can for the student to show them that there are a number of adults who are there to support them, who care about them, and specifically care about their future success.
James, your patience is rewarded now.
Yeah, and we understand that, you know, sometimes some of the barriers with the parents and those guardians who are over the youth, they may have insecurities about their own educational achievements. So they naturally will shy away from being engaged because they don't feel that they have enough to offer. But what we try to get them to understand is that it's not always about that specific topical knowledge, but it's about the love and support that you're offering your young person. And that means more than anything to them. So we want the parents to understand, don't stop just because you don't think that you've achieved enough in your education or your career, but just your support and time that you offer those students is what's really going to make an impact.
How do you structure that? Like, I mean, I'm thinking that can't be an easy conversation because there are a few, and I say this as a father myself, you know, there are a few things in life you care more about than the kind of parenting you are doing for your children. I mean, it's very hard, I would think, to say that without making it sound like a criticism of someone's parenting, which, you know, is kind of, Lauren, you're nodding your head. Go ahead.
Sure. So what I think is interesting is, you know, my organization is heavily reliant on words. I've just spent, you know, exorbitant amounts of time talking about how important they are. Mm-hmm. I also think to a certain degree, they're not helpful. They have limits too. And so instead of always articulating explicitly what you just said, we prove to parents that, hey, you have assets. Mm-hmm. You are a community member. You are an elder. You have experiences. You have laughter. You can share with us. You can come be, you know. And so at each of our events, we start off our event with kind of like mini workshops. So we get everyone writing, like, in, or at least, hey, think of an idea. Think of a word. And we draw that out of people so that they are experiencing their ability to participate, and kids see their parents differently, and it's just a really great time. And we always end our events with a community circle where every single person says one word relevant to a prompt that we do. Typically it's, hey, how are you feeling now after this event? And so, you know, there are limits, and those conversations only can develop after trust has been established. So in the meantime, we are making sure that we are offering opportunities for those parents to experience.
How do you structure that conversation, James?
Yeah, we'll
like you're going to, all three of you are going to have slightly different approaches. I want to get all of them.
Yeah, we're going to create that opportunity for transparency again. So one of our exercises we do with a group of students is we'll have the student and parent in the same room sitting right next to each other, and we'll ask the parent a question in front of the student. Name something that you wish your parent would have said to you when you were your student's age. So that student gets to see their parent or their guardian kind of in their seat, and to really see that, hey, you know what? They really were my age at one point. They do understand what it is that I'm dealing with. And when you get that type of a dialogue going, you know, that really kind of opens up the floodgates. Through one of those discussions, we had a parent respond back to us that out of that conversation provided healing in their family because they had those dialogues that they had not had before, and it created a stronger unit.
Jennifer.
Well, I'll share a slightly different avenue,
okay,
perhaps, and that is many times because our programs center around financial literacy, building an understanding of what it means to be personally financially responsible, as well as entrepreneurship, career exploration, career and work readiness skills. Oftentimes, we hear stories of students who came into Jay Biztown, for example, and spent the day running a business, paying bills, balancing their checkbook, creating their budget, and making sure they weren't overdrawn on the purchases they wanted to make that day, and later went home and shared some of that knowledge with parents that didn't have a checking account and maybe were inspired to pursue some additional financial literacy themselves. We also work with high school students. We call them our high school heroes, to pair them up with adult mentors to teach JA programs. And that's a great confidence builder for, you know, these high school students. They have the opportunity both to participate themselves in JA programs that are geared toward high school students, some of our career exploration and career fair programs, but then also to give back and work with a group of elementary school students.
If you are just joining us, we are talking about education and helping young people in anticipation of American Graduate Day, which is this Saturday. If you would like to join the conversation, please give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Send us an email at nolimits@wfyi.org. Find us on Facebook at NoLimitsWFYI or on Twitter at WFYI. My guests are James Duke of 100 Black Men, Jennifer Burke of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall of Indy Pulse. Please stay with us. Welcome back to No Limits. I am John Krall, director of Franklin College's Pulliam School of Journalism, publisher of the StatehouseFile.com, and your host. We're talking today about education in anticipation of American Graduate Day, which is this Saturday, October 3rd. American Graduate is an initiative of the Corporation for Public Broadcasting Stations and public broadcasting stations such as WFYI that aims to leverage the power of public broadcasting to help improve young people's lives by putting them on the path to graduation. My guests today are 100 Black Men President James Duke, Jennifer Burke, who's the President and CEO of Junior Achievement of Central Indiana, and Lauren Hall, who is co-founder of Indy Pulse, a slam poetry project aimed at students. Well, it sounds like, you know, from what we've been talking about here, in terms of interventions with students who might not be on a path to graduation, might not be. And I hate to, you know, to quantify this because I think at times we talk about graduation rates or whatever, and that ends the conversation about education, and it really shouldn't. It's about helping people find the best in themselves and draw forth their gifts. That mentorship is a key component, that they need someone to latch onto. Are there other things, other forms of intervention or support that you have found to be critical? Jennifer, I'm going to start with you.
Okay. Well, we rely heavily on the volunteers that mm-hmm. come from the community and deliver JA programs, again, from preschool all the way through high school, in the classrooms, in our JA BizTown facility, and then outside of that, you know, have the opportunity to perhaps serve as mentors. So one of the programs that we're seeing a tremendous growth in demand for is our JA Career Experience Program, which is for middle and high school students and involves significant curriculum around assessing talents and interests and strengths and considering careers that might be appropriate, might be of interest, and then developing a plan to pursue those. As a part of that program, we do a career fair, and we're working with Eli Lilly and a group of other local companies to develop a really large-scale career expo that'll take place next fall and will include a large number of businesses divided among the clusters that are identified by the Indiana or the U.S. Department of Labor, and expose students to these hands-on opportunities over a period of a couple of days, where they can really get in and try out what it means to, you know, work in the manufacturing field, to work in the broadcast field, to serve in a public service role, and so many others. So we think that it's just really critical that young people get an opportunity to envision themselves in roles that are productive and of interest to them and support a successful future for them.
James, I'm going to throw that one to you. Are there other systems of support or intervention that, other than mentoring, that are critical?
Mentoring is big for us, but we do understand that there are other components as well. So we try to integrate technology as much as possible with working with our students. You know, we've been around for over 30 years, and, you know, sometimes our ways of communicating can be 30-year-old ways of communicating. So we're trying to interact with our students as much as we can through technology, through surveys. historically, in order for us to get our data and feedback to understand that we're doing a good job, we'll do the usual paper surveys and have them complete them. But we're looking at using technology through their cell phones, through their smartphones, through other vehicles of technology to get real-time responses so we can talk about those types of things. So we found that that level of engagement has kind of gotten them more interested in participating and being more engaging.
Lauren.
Yeah, so I see our work in three points here, right? So we have the academics with our Common Core Indiana State Standards aligned curriculum. And I think this is an important point. Data matters, right? We can all agree on that. Data don't explain everything, but they do matter. And the fact that, you know, there is estimation made on how many prison beds will be needed based off literacy metrics and qualifiers matters. So we take that to heart. Also thinking about self-regulation, I'm sure some folks out there might be familiar with the marshmallow test. So students' ability to control themselves and sense of self, we have those conversations. We practice that. We've seen our students grow in their ability to control their hot button emotions, as well as their over-enthusiastic moments. And then the third thing is something that Jennifer, you know, touched on, was this idea that there's you need to let students be able to imagine themselves and experience what it feels like to be a certain type of person and do a certain type of thing. So we are purposeful about connecting our students into the community. We're actually doing a collaborative project with the Indianapolis Museum of Art, their brand new Teen Arts Council. So our students are meeting, dialoguing, making some decisions about an event we will have November 5th at the IMA in the evening. We would love for any and all community members to come to that. And then also a piece that James mentioned, thinking about technology, we do online challenges. So our students participate and they create videos and they can upload those. And so we just want to make sure that we're hitting a lot of the key elements that are going to equip our students for the 21st century.
We are talking about education and helping young people on the path to success here on No Limits in anticipation of American Graduate Day, which is this Saturday, October 3rd. If you'd like to join the conversation, give us a buzz at 866-476-3881. Art, welcome to the program.
Greetings again, as I've talked to you before.
Mm-hmm.
I wanted to relate a quick anecdote. I have a very good friend. He grew up in Kansas. In a very structured and disciplined, hardworking, all hands-on farm environment. Started helping on the farm at a very early age. He only had one accessible possible reading opportunity, which was the Encyclopedia Britannica. He read it all in grades 4, 5, 6, and 7 on the side.
Mm-hmm.
And as a result, I think that was a very good thing because he explored very widely and very deeply many different subjects and got exposed to a great deal, which I felt, I've always felt, was a very important thing to do at as early an age as possible. I never thought a person could do it as young as he did.
And my guess
is a great advantage.
Yeah.
He wound up going to the University of Kansas. He became one of 50 nationwide fellows, NASA fellows.
Oh, wow.
And ultimately, he became the chief science officer for Eli Lilly.
Oh, wow. Thanks for that story, Art.
I thought you'd
That's inspiring. No, thank you very much.
I think that the key things in there, there's the fact he came up through a structured, disciplined, hardworking environment. So he had lots of things he had to do. He only read this in his spare time.
Yeah, my guess is also he would have been a hands-down winner at Jeopardy and Trivial Pursuit and all of the other stuff. Thank you very much for the call, Art. It's always
Indeed.
Good to hear from you. Thanks.
Uh-huh.
And go ahead, Lauren.
Oh, yeah. If I can jump in, I very much appreciate Art's phone call. Part of the future of Indie Pulse is getting at this, right? What Art brings up is that, hey, look, literacy and this community and these definitions and structures in life help all kids, you know, and we can all reflect again and think about, you know, other neighborhoods that maybe we haven't directly articulated about, whether they be suburban or rural, and thinking about how Indie Pulse and arts and culture are really a lever for, you know, systematic change in cities and communities. So without getting too heady, there are some great researchers at University of Pennsylvania right now, who Stern and Seifert, who look at social impact with arts programming. And so we really think about that as a tool for us to get diverse communities to do what Art said and think about words and interact, share stories, empathize, and grow together.
Does it trouble you at all, Lauren, that often, you know, I mean, we're in an era now in which educational budgets are under tremendous pressure, political and otherwise, and the arts are often one of the first things that are on the chopping block when they look at figuring out ways to, you know, to have the black outweigh the red, as it were.
Sure. Yeah. Yeah, it does. Do we let it stop us? No. So I think the Midwest is catching up a little bit. But if we look at D.C., we look at the East Coast, they are using STEM, but with arts involved in there, right? So STEAM is becoming a huge new thing. I hear James recognizing it. So I think
he recognized the cue.
So we're recognizing how valuable it is for our students to step back from the math and the science and the technology that is vitally important in this new age, and be able to critically think and innovate and see a sense of themselves in that, because otherwise there's no real need for it, right? These days we can get likes, we can get, you know, posts, we can express ourselves in all these social media ways that if we can show students how they can be a part of these other elements that are important to their future, then we've really got them and are changing life trajectories.
How much of this, too, and I say this, is a problem of the fact that we tend to think education is exclusively the school's responsibility? Mm-hmm. I'm not just talking about the parent, but, you know, the premise for all three of your organizations or initiatives here is, no, this is too important just to leave to schools. You know, we have to have a role, too. Jennifer, I'll start with you on that.
Well, first off, I think so many of our teachers do such an amazing job, and we certainly want to recognize and acknowledge that, but they need help. And, you know, what we see in junior achievement programs is an opportunity to complement what's taking place in the classroom, to build upon that classroom learning and bring in inspiration like the story that Art told, bring in people's personal stories of accomplishments, challenges, and ultimately a career that they are well-suited for and enjoy, so that we can show those kinds of role models to our youth and inspire them to reach for their dreams as well. But first they have to identify what their dreams are. And so many kids don't have any idea what it means to be in manufacturing, to be an engineer, to be in any number of careers. And so our goal is to expose them to that breadth of opportunities out there and help them find their path.
James, I mean, if it's true, and you alluded to this earlier, that it takes a village to raise a child, that raises the question, how does the village go about doing that?
One day and one child at a time. So the village needs to remain flexible, needs to remain accessible, and it needs to remain innovative, because we haven't even though I was a business major in college, I went to a liberal arts institution. So being well-rounded is very key, being exposed, because it just makes you a person who has a good perspective. And we mentioned earlier about, you know, math is not just about math. Math is about solving problems. And it's solving life problems, making decisions, be it with your family, be it with your community. You know, so we try to get our students to understand that when you go to school to get that education, don't get caught up in those individual specific things, English, math, you know, understand what it represents. So our role as a village is to come alongside of those educational institutions and fill in where they don't have those arts programs and expose those students to those things.
Correct me if I'm wrong, Lauren, but in the places where in the brain that engage with math and poetry are mm-hmm. the same place, basically, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and just to echo both things, our other contributors have said, you know, teachers are working so hard. Mm-hmm. They are, and schools are working hard, and people are, you know, we're trying to solve these problems. Part of it is that we've got to focus on assets as well. Assets being in individual students, in individual families, and in exactly what you just brought up is this idea that how much benefit there is to not think of these different pieces of education as silos, right? To not think about math or science or even the experiences that Jennifer mentioned in silos, but rather to think more synergistically about how we combine them to create really meaningful experiences.
We are talking about education in anticipation of American Graduate Day here on No Limits. Julie, welcome to the program.
Hi, Don. Hi. I just wanted to say that I tutor through my church with IPS School 43. We have a volunteer program that we can sign up to tutor at that particular school. And I have grown immensely from just the opportunity to work with the children there. And I feel like there's such an opportunity for more volunteers in the community to go in there and connect with kids. And I would love also to learn how to be a better tutor, how to do more literacy tutoring. The connecting one-on-one is amazing, and I'm fortunate to have a wonderful teacher that I tutor for. But I guess I'm interested to learn more about how to be a better tutor, and I'd also like to encourage others to consider tutoring.
Thank you very much for the call and the comment, Julie. And actually, you anticipated what was my last question for the show, so I really appreciate your call. So, and I think that tees it up. If the people have been listening to this and they want to find ways to help, or if they're young people who feel the need for some help or would like to get involved with your organizations, how should they do that? How should they go about doing that? Mm-hmm. I'll start first with you, Jennifer.
Great. Thanks, John. Certainly. Well, we could certainly use your help out there. We are always looking for more volunteers, and you can learn more at jaindy.org about our programs and volunteer opportunities or by calling us at 317-252-5900. And just any extension, all of us there will be happy to help you. We will reach over 25,000 students in Central Indiana this year, and so we need your help in volunteering.
Lauren, real quickly, in about 15 seconds.
Sure. So we also have a website, indypulse.org, IndyPulse.org. Also, that is the same beginning of our email, indypulse@gmail.com. We are looking for program partners. We are looking for volunteers. Would love all of that.
And about 15 seconds for you, James.
100 Black Men of Indianapolis. Our website is www.100blackmenindy.org. You can also reach us on Facebook and Twitter. And always looking for volunteers. Our phone number is 317-921-1276.
I'd like to thank all three of my guests. It's been a lively and fun conversation. I've learned a lot from you. If you, our listeners, would like to learn more about American Graduate, please go to our website, www.wfyi.org. I'm John Kroll. You've been listening to No Limits. Thank you for joining us.
No Limits is a production of 90.1 WFYI Public Radio, Indianapolis. Executive producer, Michelle Johnson. Producer, Shannon Cagle. Interactive media coordinator, Melissa Davis. Technical producers, Cedric Freeman and Chris Flood. And board engineer, Joe Hatcher. Abby Terzini screens our calls. No Limits is made available through IPBS, Indiana's public broadcasting stations.